Today is Monday, November 20th, 2023. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Dan Cockrum. Dan spells his last name C-O-C-K-R-U-M. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Dan. How are you today?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear.
Got together.
Yeah, me too. Dan, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Dan, what year were you born?
1940.
Okay. Where were you born?
Lubbock, Texas.
Okay. How did your mom meet your dad, do you know?
They more or less grew up. My dad was 5 or 6 years older than my mom, but they grew up in a little town of Post, south of Lubbock.
P-O-S-T?
POST, it was established by the serial king, whatever.
By
the post Osties.
Really?
Yeah, he set the, bought 250,000 acres of land in Garza, Linn County, Texas, and he established a little town of Post in 1906.
Wow. What was he doing with that much land in Texas? Now we're really heading out into the weeds quickly.
He had ranches, and he was selling farmsteads, you know, 40 acres of land with a house and a windmill on it.
Oh, wow. My.
And then he had a lot of it in ranch land.
So your folks would have met in high school?
No, my dad wasn't in school. My mother was 6 years younger than him, but he worked at the Post news paper that they had at that time.
Okay.
Post Dispatch, and he used to talk about seeing my mother roller skating on the corner on the sidewalk across from the doctor's office where her mother was working.
Okay.
And they got married in 1938.
Okay. So your dad was in journalism then?
He was an operator. He learned to operate printing presses and linotypes, typesetting.
These are these giant machines where you put the little lead letters in to...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He went to work for them. He didn't finish high school. He went to work for them when he was... 16 years old, maybe.
Okay.
And that he learned a trade.
He did. Yeah. Nice. Okay. Did he go into the service?
No.
Okay. And what were his parents doing in Post?
They had moved there sometime after World War I. I'm not sure exact date, but his dad operated a service station.
Okay.
And his mom was just a housekeeper.
Well, did your dad get into machinery and mechanics and that kind of stuff?
He went to some trade school on machines. I think the dispatch paid for part of it. I don't know the whole story. I do know he still had some... measuring instruments that you'd be using in a machine shop when
okay.
we did the estate sale.
Like caliper kind of things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he learned to not only operate those linotypes, he learned how to work on them, how to fix them.
Which they needed a lot of, didn't they?
Oh, not the Post Dispatch. They only had one.
So he had to keep it going, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. The widow who established the paper, and her son, and the three of them were operating the newspaper there in Post. The Post is like 3,000 people, 3,000 population back then.
Okay.
So it was a little small town, weekly newspaper.
It was a weekly
daily newspaper.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And my dad worked for him for 20 years, and then he got a job at the Lubbock Cadillac Journal as a line of shop operator.
Was that also a post?
No, that was in Lubbock.
Okay.
But he commuted from Post. We didn't move to Lubbock.
Okay. And was that a newspaper, the Cadillac?
Yeah.
And was that
Cadillac? Yeah.
Was that a daily?
That was a daily.
Okay. So as a kid, did you have like an E or a couple letters from a couple linotype little lead stamp letters?
Oh yeah. Well, I learned how to hand set type.
Wow.
I worked in the print shop. I haven't told you about that yet. He eventually came back to Post and started a printing business of his own, an office supply.
Okay. All right. Well, let's not get there just yet.
Yeah.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
No.
Okay. What are some of your earliest childhood memories?
Well, the house we lived in when I began keeping a memory, I mean, I was like 3 or 4 years old. Our house at that time was right next door to the house my mom was born in. My grandmother lived next door to us.
Oh, wow.
Her mother, my mother's mother, who had been a widow since 1917 when her husband had passed away. He was operating a wagon yard in Post. He'd been a cowboy and a cook on the ranches around Scurry County, Garza County, Kent County, and Dickens County.
Okay.
And he ended up, had to slow down some, so he bought out a guy that had a wagon. Are you familiar what a wagon yard is?
I'm not. What is a wagon yard?
Well, it was a place folks would come to in the weekend, come in to shop. This is, wagons and livestock. They'd come in and spend Saturday night in town. It was like an RV shop.
Okay.
RV place for people to they could camp out with their wagon and feed their animals, take care of the animals.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Anyway, he died on the job in 1917.
Wow. How did your grandmother on your mom's side, how did she survive? She had a child?
It was a rough. She had my mother less than a year before he died, before his father. My mother had two sisters, older sisters, and an older brother.
Wow.
And the older brother at that time was, I think he was in France, World War I. But she still had my mother and one of the girls were still there when he passed away. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was a rough time for that lady.
I bet.
Yeah. But, she, the best of my knowledge, she was had a job or a career as like a practical nurse receptionist for two of the doctors there in Post.
Okay.
And that's how she got by as best she could.
So she didn't try to keep the wagon yard going?
No, no, no. She sold that.
Okay. Okay. And what was your dad's name?
My dad was Dan B. Cockrum.
Okay.
Dan Bush. And I was Dan E. Everybody in the family called me Dan E, and he was Dan B.
Okay. Bush, B-U-S-H or B-U-S-C-H?
B-U-S-H, just like the... In fact, I've done a little bit of genealogy, and that branch of the family is... the founder of Bush Beans in Tennessee.
Oh.
Yeah, he's like a a great granduncle of mine, a great great granduncle of mine.
Okay. Huh. And what's your mom's name?
My mom's name? Sybil Lorene Marable, M-A-R-A-B-L-E.
Can you spell Sybil Lorene for me?
Or is two words, Sybil, S-Y-B-I-L, and then L-O-R-E-N-E.
Okay, Sybil Lorene, got it. So two words.
Yeah, it was two words, yeah. She went by both. Some folks call her Lorene, some people call her Sybil.
Okay. And your dad was Dan B.
Bush, yeah.
And you were Dan E.
Yeah, Edward.
Okay. Dan or Edward. So people would be confused because they were thinking somebody was saying Danny, as in D-A-N-N-Y.
I came home first day, or first time I learned how to write my name. The teachers, you know, have everybody in the class write their name.
Yes.
I came home and showed my mom. Here's D-A-N-N-Y. She says, your name is not D-A-N-N-Y. It's D-A-N capital E.
And you had been practicing that all day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I remember that day really well.
Threw you for a loop. You were back to the drawing board again. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I still have people call me Danny.
That's fun.
I mean, I go back from my... Well, I missed my 65th class reunion this year because of health problems, but there's still some people that when I go there call me Danny, because I've got a good friend named Johnny that I've known for 83 years almost.
And
he's still Johnny.
Is he J-O-H-N-E for his middle name?
No, of course. Okay. No, it's Johnny.
Okay, very fun. What do you remember of growing up before going to school there in post-Texas?
Well, I just remember, you know, having a part of, I remember the latter part of World War II, some of the things that were going on. I've got pictures of me in a little army outfit. My grandmother and mother, or one or the other, or both worked on an army uniform. On a pony. Wasn't my pony. I still don't know where the pony came from. I remember our victory. Well, we didn't call it a victory garden, but we had a pretty good-sized garden at that time between our house and my grandmother's house next door.
Okay. Did you have chickens? Did you have rabbits or anything?
We had chickens. We had chickens. We had ducks.
Okay.
I always had to get my Easter duck every year.
Okay.
We didn't have any livestock, any cows or anything like that. But still in post Texas, you can have chickens in your backyard.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What else?
But no livestock. Yep.
No livestock.
Okay.
I just remember having to go and get milk. We didn't have a dairy or delivery, so we had to go to a farm just outside of town. I remember going out there and getting raw milk right from the farmer.
Would you walk out there?
No, we drove. No.
Okay. So you'd ride out there with your mom or dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
And finally, when we did finally get a dairy there in post, we had delivered to the back porch, of course.
Okay.
That happened right about the end of the war. What else? I remember vividly what do they call it, VJ Day, when Japan surrendered.
Yes.
My dad was on the volunteer fire department, and I remember they got the fire truck out and came around and all picked up the firemen, and they all rode around town with the fire siren to go in, and still see my dad going out that back door.
Wow.
get on that fire truck. Yeah.
Nice.
I remember about that time, we had, too young, I don't remember the full reason for it, but my dad had this property between our house and my grandmother's house. He wanted it leveled up, and there was an old fella, a black fella, missing one leg, that showed up with a mule, had a wagon, a mule, and I can't remember what they call the piece of equipment, but it was a scraper.
Yeah, a box scraper.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that I was really watching this old fellow with his crutch and his one leg.
Wow.
Following around behind that mule, scraping that. So that's before, I guess, we planted the garden. Maybe that was preparing the garden, but I remember that pretty vividly.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And then schooling, first grade, that was all right there in Post, going to school.
Yeah, and I walked to school.
Okay. How far did you have to walk?
Oh, about 4 blocks.
Okay, not far.
5 blocks, yeah. Yeah, I did that until I got a bicycle and I rode it. I don't remember. It'd have to really be bad weather or something, but Mom would take me to... Yeah, we didn't have any snow days, that's for sure. The kids out on the farms, they got to stay out of school, but we were expected to show up in town.
Okay.
Yeah. That's... Unless, you know, the power went out, we lost power or something.
Hmm.
But I remember going to school and with this, snow.
How did you, do you remember how your house was heated back then?
Yeah, it was gas stoves in each room.
Oh, okay, like a little gas wall heater?
Yeah, but they weren't built into the wall. They were, you see them on the vintage sale, people have them for antique, I don't know what proper things you'd call it. They're kind of ornate. Some of them were pretty well decorated, but we had one in the living room. And each bedroom had one. And back then, the natural gas we got, you could air up balloons with it and had enough helium or hydrogen, and they would float away.
No kidding.
That.
Wow.
Yeah. This natural gas we have now, I don't know whether we refine that out or not, but I remember that.
Was that something you would do for birthdays, or your dad would do? You sort of, tap the line and.
I don't know. I just remember doing it.
Fun.
I don't remember. Yeah.
In your early days of school, did you have any teachers that you connected with?
I remember Mrs. Thomas was my first grade teacher, but I hardly remember the names of any of my others.
Okay. All right.
I think I liked her because she was nice and I learned something from her. I don't remember her doing anything that would make me mad or afraid of her,
Mm-hmm.
But Miss Thomas.
Okay.
Oh, you're talking about walking to school?
Yeah.
And I nearly became a victim during a sandstorm. The streets were not paved at that time.
Okay.
There were no sidewalks in the yards. When you went to school, you walked in the street. And I was walking down the street with a sweater or a little jacket pulled up over my head. And all of a sudden, bam, I'm knocked down by a car.
Whoa.
And the guy was going so slow because of the visibility that he didn't run over me, but he drugged me a little bit. Either the back of my jacket or some part of my clothing caught on the front bumper. And he was driving, before he stopped, he was dragging me with me yelling.
Wow.
It scared him as bad as it scared me.
Right.
He was one of those, I don't know if you've ever been in one of those kind of sandstorms, but we had them. They still have them over there in that area, but you can't see beyond the end of the hood of your car. The sand is blowing so hard.
Okay.
So that was a little incident that I remember from my school days.
Wow. Yeah, that's a close call. I mean, nowadays people drive so fast in those kind of winds, and suddenly there's a semi right in front of them, and it's way too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a three story schoolhouse.
Okay.
With a slide from the third floor. That was a fire escape. It was a slide, a steel slide.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I'm just thinking about that going, well, I'd like to try that.
I didn't. Especially back in those days, if you had the wax paper off the bread sack and you set that down and cut down on it, you really got a ride.
Whoa. How did the principal keep you kids from, like, doing that every day?
We was a little more, I guess, obedient. It was a trick to try to get up there, to go up the thing, to slide down.
So you actually were climbing up the thing from the bottom.
Well, yeah, you tried to as best you could. Yeah.
Yep.
Unless you could. I can't remember. The upper part of it was off of a hallway. It wasn't out of just a single room. It was a hallway, auditorium in that old building was up there.
Okay.
And, I remember going up there, we'd have, not only would we say Pledge of Allegiance in school, but we'd have get all the classes to get together in the auditorium and have sing-alongs. And I don't know, I'm probably a little bit of religious. I can't remember. But I do remember singing in that auditorium as a child.
Would you bring your lunch from home?
No.
Did you go home for lunch?
I'd go home for lunch.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Did your mom knit?
Did she what?
Did she knit? Was she a knitter?
Oh, yeah. Knitter, crocheter. Anything, decoupage.
Wow.
She did a lot of crafts. Fortunately, she taught, but we have daughters, two daughters and my son.
Okay.
And both of my daughters learned a lot from their grandmother.
Nice.
I married a Yankee that no one end of a crocheted needle.
Those are really good skills to have. And back in the day, I mean, the quilts these ladies were making are just beautiful.
Yeah, my older daughter still makes quilts, but she doesn't make the big ones that you have to have the quilting rack. Are you familiar how that was done?
No.
Well, I still have the clamps. They look like carpentry clamps. For woodwork,
yep.
But they were ornate looking, and what they did, they helped you put this frame, it's four-sided frame together with these clamps, and then you stretch your fabric over that, and then back. My grandmother would have this rack set up in her living room, and then she'd invite the ladies over.
Okay.
And they'd sit around and gossip and work on these quilts. A full-size double bed quilt.
Wow.
And, but my daughter doesn't use that method. She just makes smaller quilts, more decorative than anything.
What was your mom's name?
Well, Mom, Willietta Callis.
How do you spell that?
Willietta. Callis.
Okay. So she would have ladies over and they would do quilting days.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that as a child being over there when some of her friends were there and they were all sitting around the quilting frame doing their thing.
Wow. Fun. And I'm assuming they would all help each other with each other's quilts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a social get-together.
Yeah, very fun.
Yeah.
Huh. And then did you go into junior high and high school there in Post?
We had didn't have junior high. We had eighth grade was in high school.
Okay.
We had the primary school, first grade to seventh grade, and then we went to eighth grade. We were in the high school building.
Okay. Were your parents big on education?
Well, my dad, as I say, he didn't finish high school.
Okay.
My mother did, and she went on to a beauty parlor school over in Roswell, New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that was pretty, this was in Depression time.
Okay.
And there, and it was a hard time. She got back to Post, but she never had, at that time, I guess, to be a licensed beautician, you had to go to Austin.
Okay.
To get certified.
You wow.
Yeah, and she never had the money to go to Austin. So
you guys essentially are in West Texas, isn't it?
What's that?
You all were in West Texas?
Yeah, yeah.
So Austin's way over on the other side of the state.
Oh, yeah, you have to go by train.
Wow.
Yeah, but she just never could do it. But she, you know. So anyway, she was working in a drugstore, and she might have been doing beautician work at home, but she never did. She couldn't work in a regular parlor because she didn't have the license designer.
Right.
She was still, when I was growing up in high school, sometimes she'd do neighbor's hair for them.
Okay.
So, but anyway, as far as education, my generation were the first that had finished college.
Okay.
I'd say my cousins, at least three of my cousins, finished college of both sides of the family.
Okay. All right, well, let's not get there quite yet. Let's go back to high school. What were some of the classes you really liked in high school?
History, primarily.
Really? Like what kind of history?
Oh, not the ancient Greek and Roman. It's just European and up to the 20th century.
Okay. Did you have a teacher that helped you with that?
Well, I can't say that they did. I can't remember. We had one who used to talk about if he had a platoon of SS troops at the gate of the Alamo, those Mexicans never would have won the war. So I mean, I remember him real well.
My. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't remember. No, not. I don't know if any of my teachers really in here got me.
Okay. And what?
Well, I was in.
Sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was in. In 1957. I came down with the illness. I was in the hospital up in Lubbock for two weeks, and then when I got home, I was bedridden. I couldn't go to school for several months. This all happened like around Thanksgiving, and it was well into March before I got back into school.
Wow!
And I had some I had some teachers there that were working with me at home and kept me up with my classes as best I could.
So what was the disease? What did you have?
Myocarditis is what they finally decided it was. The inflammation of the sac around your lungs.
Yeah.
And heart.
Yeah.
And I was under an oxygen tent for two. This is before they had the nostril stuff. I was in a tent for 2 weeks up there. It was at that time. It was the Methodist Hospital.
Okay.
So yeah, I had some teachers that were really Mr. Kittle. He was algebra teacher. I had a government teacher. I had several of them that were helping me along while I was laid up.
Boy, I would think an event like that would help you become a good reader if you wrote one.
Well, I read a lot, and I also had the TV in my room.
Ah.
Of course, at that time, the TV went off at midnight, but I did read a lot.
What kind of stuff were you reading? What did you like to read?
Are you familiar with Landmark books?
No.
There were books for juvenile reading. They'd take a story like 30 Seconds Over Tokyo,
okay,
and it kind of condense it down. It wasn't a comic, but they weren't comic books, hardbound books.
Mm-hmm.
And they're different. A lot of it is history.
Okay.
I remember having those books. And I guess I wasn't too much into Westerns that time.
Okay.
I liked war stories.
Okay.
And I got into archaeology.
Okay. Was there any kind of archaeology around Post?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Tell me.
We had, well, first Lubbock had at Tech had the South Plains Archaeological Society.
Okay.
Out of Tech. And we had a chapter down in Garza County. And in fact, it developed into, are you familiar with Explorer Scouts?
Yes.
We'll have Explorer Scouts, you see, they kind of specialize some of cops, firemen, and we had it for archaeologists.
Oh, wow.
And, we did a lot of work there in Rosa County. But when I was in high school and while I was in college, right up to the time I graduated, I guess if I thought I could have made a living doing excavations and learning from them, I would have become an archaeologist. But to do that, you got to have grants. You got to be a teacher too. And I wasn't that into it that much.
Right, right. You got to be a PhD, and have a university backing, and back in the 50s.
Yeah, of course. Of course, it's making it a little bit better now with all the laws about preservation and whatnot.
That's right.
There's a bigger job base for archaeologists now, because you can't turn a shovel of dirt over on a road job or anything until the archaeologist has cleared the area.
That's right. There's much more of a sense of preservation and cultural heritage for the country.
Exactly. And but back in those days, I didn't want to be I like working outdoors, so I ended up civil engineering. I got to be out a lot with that.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit. I'm going to back up to in the summer when you didn't have to go to school. What would you do?
Okay, I would work in my dad's paint shop. And I would also, I didn't mention it, my dad, before he got his business really going good, he also was a, what do they call him now? Lease, lease operator in the oil field. That part of Texas, in Garza County, went into a big oil boom in the 50s.
Okay.
And a lease operator job that he did, it was part-time. He had spent most of his time in the print shop, but he had to go out and make sure the pump jacks were running, have to gauge the tanks to see how full they were of crude oil, and then contact the pipeline operation for people to come over and check the oil and turn the valves and buy the oil out of the tanks. So that was it, kind of in a nutshell, what he did. But it would take probably 2 or 3 hours of his day doing that. And as an operator, he also would have a fund for keeping the equipment. Well, number one, keeping the grass and the weeds from growing up around those wells.
Okay.
You know, where the storage and the tank storages are, and also for painting. Well, sometime I painted pump jacks in the summertime.
Okay.
Me and some of my buddies, my dad would hire us. He'd get fun, you know, to hire a contractor. We were his contractors. Yeah.
And so these were the one lunger diesel big flywheel kind of pump jacks?
Yeah, but they were electric, the ones we did.
Oh.
You had to be in a remote area that you had one of those, we call them popping Johnnies. You could hear them for
yeah.
a mile or two away. Sealed cylinder, pop, 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 pop. Yeah.
Yes.
All those leashes my dad had electric motors on.
Okay.
But that's the two jobs I had, or two things I did. I learned how to run a printing press. I never learned to do the linotype. My dad.
Right, his machine, the linotype. But you did run a printing press, okay?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yep.
And you must have been looking at the electric pump jacks and the diesel ones and just being aware of tanks and hoses and valves and
oh yeah,
and that sort of stuff.
I don't know if you're in the oil business area where there was big oil booms, but back in those days, they had these waste pits. The bulldozer dig these big pits, and any oil that was not suitable, too much paraffin in it or whatever, would get dumped into those pits, and then you'd burn it off.
Wow.
And you could be driving along in that part of Texas and see these big black clouds going up in the air.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Huh. And that was a thrill. I got to set those things off every once in a while.
Oh, boy. How did you light them on fire? What would you do?
Use a lot of torch and throw it down in there.
That was it?
Yeah. Huh. We usually had kerosene or gasoline handy to make a torch and throw it in there. It was a bad deal. Those pits also attracted birds.
Oh, my.
The birds would fly. They'd think it was water. And the next thing you know, oil.
Yeah.
It was a good thing when it came to it. It was a good thing it came to it. Not only because of the air quality, but for the wildlife.
Right.
And probably, those pits were not lined, so, but, you know, it could eventually affect the water table, I guess.
Oh, yeah, sure. I hadn't thought of that. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was back then. The town of Post, I think, got over 5,000 there when we had the oil boom going.
Wow. How many wells was your dad responsible for?
I would say about a dozen.
Okay.
And that was two different companies that had him, being a lease operator.
Okay. All right.
We just got back in those days, you had the pumper, that would be him, and you had the gauger, who was the guy that came, showed up to measure the, to check the oil to sell to the pipeline. So that was terminology then, but now they call, I don't know what they call the pump line, pipeline guy, but the pumpers are now called lease operators.
Okay. And the pipelines, there must have been a whole spider web of pipelines that eventually went off to some sort of a, either a larger holding facility or actually some sort of refinery.
Yeah.
What did they do?
Yeah. They'd be pumped to a refinery.
Okay.
And some places where they didn't have the pipeline yet, they had trucks that come in and get the crude oil and take it to the refinery.
Where was the nearest refinery to you guys?
I know there was one over. The one I know for sure was over in Artesia,
okay,
New Mexico. But I think there might have been some like down toward Midland, Odessa. But I believe the nearest one to us was over in Artesia.
How close were you to the New Mexico border?
I'm sorry, what?
How close were
How
you?
Close?
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. About three counties.
Okay.
Away from the border. I can't tell you how many miles that would be, but you crossed two, Linn County, Gaines. Yeah, three counties. We were three counties over from the...
So maybe a couple hundred miles?
Yeah.
Okay. And in your summers, working for your dad, did you guys do any vacations? Did you ever do that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Where'd you go?
We go to California. My mother's one sister and one brother went out to California during the World War II and got jobs at the aircraft plants out there.
Who were they working for, or where were they?
Consolidated was one. That was the one my aunt worked for. I can't remember the one my uncle worked for. My uncle was in San Diego, and my aunt and her husband were in Los Angeles. And okay. She worked for Consolidated, but I don't remember what my uncle, what company he worked for in San Diego.
Okay.
Of course, we didn't go out there during the war. We went out there right after the war when the rations were, you know, gas was available, tires were available. And
right.
Some of those plants still had camouflage nettings or, you know. I remember driving by them and seeing the aircraft factory with the odd paint job on it or netting over it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, trying to hide what they were doing.
Well, those Japanese, you know.
Well.
They had come up and fired off a few rounds.
Yep.
At Long Beach or somewhere over there.
Okay.
The oil fields on the coast there in California, they were trying to set them on fire.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember going on Route 66 when it was a two-lane highway.
What do you remember about that?
Oh, I just remember all the nice tourist stops, you know.
Like see, what?
See the jackalopes or see the rattlesnakes.
Right.
Buy some Indian jewelry or craft stuff. That was always.
And you guys would have been going out to L.A. Was that through Tucson that you went, or did you go up through Flagstaff on the northern route?
We go, since we were going to both L.A. and San Diego.
Yep.
We'd usually go the north route and go to L.A. and then go down San Diego and then come back the south route.
All right. That makes sense.
You know,
Yeah. So you'd go out through Kingman and Oatman, over to Vegas, cross the Hoover Dam, and then head out to what? Barstow or something?
No, we'd cross the Needles.
Cross at Needles. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Route 66 went that way.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep. And then we get, like I said, we come back to the southern route.
Yuma,
and over to Tucson.
Yep. And then out toward El Paso.
Gila Bend.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, that was always great. And back in those days, we had water bags. I remember that. Have you ever seen the evaporative coolers?
My earliest memories of growing up in Tucson, Arizona, were in the late 1950s, and my folks had one of those on the Nash Rambler.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get a lot of spray on you?
I just remember the water was lovely and cool, and I couldn't figure it out. I mean, things sits out there outside, you know, and it's so hot in the car. And by golly, it's nice and cool out there. Water's really good. I couldn't figure it out. It took a long time.
Yeah. And we had the water bags hanging on the front bumpers.
Yep,
we did that.
And then I'm assuming that on your drive out west to L.A., at one point somebody would have turned right at Williams and driven up to the South Rim.
No, my mom and dad's honeymoon was at the South Rim. They didn't see it. The only time my family saw the Grand Canyon when I was living with them is we went to the North Rim.
Okay, so now you got to tell me these two stories. You didn't tell me your mom and dad honeymooned at the South Rim. Why did they choose that place to go?
Well, it was the place to go. I guess they stayed in one of those cabins. They're at Maverick, those little log cabins they got there, Maslick.
Oh, you mean one of the, they were tent camps, right? They had wooden sides, but tents on the top. Campus
exactly.
on top.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's where they stayed,
Yeah, the Maslick Tour Lodge, or whatever they called it back then.
So anyway, when we got to Flagstaff, we just kept going west.
Huh. Okay, but how did you end up then on the North Rim?
Well, it was later on, we had friends that had come from Panguitch, Utah.
Okay.
And I don't remember, they weren't up there at the time, but my mom and dad decided, this is when I was either still in high school or just in college. We went up there. We went up to Page, and they had just completed the bridge across the Colorado there where they're building the dam.
Yep.
You can get out on that bridge and look down and see the foundation of the dam.
59 or 58, somewhere right in there?
Somewhere in there, right in that area. And we went all the way up. We went to the North Rim, then we went up to Bryce Canyon and Panguitch.
Nice.
And somewhere in between those trips to California and that trip, we had gone, this is right after the war, we went up to Colorado, all the way to Denver, and up into those, what were ghost towns back in those days,
or
ski resorts now.
Yep.
That was another one of our vacation trips that we made. Back in those, since you asked me about the trip,
yeah,
where we went and what we did.
How did your parents know to go up there?
My dad liked it. He liked Western history. He wanted to see the areas where these ghost towns were, and it was great. I mean, yeah, we rode the Denver Silverton Durango Railway. If you're familiar with that.
Yeah, still running today.
Yep.
Nice. And you would have seen the same one lugger engines at those ghost towns at the mines, just like on the oil field. So you would have seen some similar mechanics going on there.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah.
Fun.
But, yeah. Too bad it didn't buy some property up there.
You wouldn't have been able to afford it then, just like nobody else could. I would have been maybe better. I don't know. Under hindsight.
Well, you've been to Jerome?
Yes.
Well, I've been back in the 60s. I wish I'd bought some property up there.
Yes, I bet you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, let's see. So Jerome wasn't on Route 66, was it?
No. I learned about Jerome while I was at the South Rim.
Oh, okay. All right.
That was one of the places to go.
So in high school, you liked history. Did you get into, was there a shop class? Were there any other kind of trades classes happening high school?
They had the shop, but it was agriculture. Future Farmers of America.
Yep.
They had learned how to do welding and stuff that you'd be doing maybe on the farm. At that time, we didn't have any wood shop, no.
Okay. But did you get into FFA? Did you learn how to run a welder, that kind of stuff?
No, I didn't learn how to run a welder, but I don't know how to use shop tools.
Okay.
Wood shop. I got into that Well, in fact, I went to night course there at Grand Canyon High School on wood shop.
Well, wait a minute. Now, how did that happen?
this is in my time there as chief of maintenance and engineer.
Okay, back up. Now, just hold off on that. I want to know all about that, but not quite yet because you're still in high school.
I'm talking about 1984.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about 1954 here. So, maybe 55. Yeah. When you're in high school, when did college? Let me back up a minute. Were you in sports at all in high school?
No, I was in the band.
What'd you play?
8th grade to senior. Cornet.
Okay. So that taught you all about rhythm and musicality and how to walk to the beat. Did you get into dancing at all?
No, not at all. I wasn't much of a...
But there would have been gals there.
Yeah.
Where there might have been much fewer of them in wood shop and that kind of stuff. So, or certainly in basketball or football. And did you get a chance to do the marching band thing at the homecoming game and go into parades and that kind of stuff?
Oh yeah, we did.
Okay. Did you keep your musical? Did you keep playing after high school?
No, I didn't.
Okay. All right, and then how did college creep into your life? How did even thoughts about it start coming together?
Well, my dad, at one time, are you familiar with ham radio?
Yes.
Okay, he and a friend of his in the 1920s, they had a little ham radio.
Whoa, in the 1920s?
Yeah, well, late 20s.
Okay.
Late 30s.
Okay.
And he got me kind of interested in that. I got my novice license for that, but I never did get any further.
Okay.
I thought electrical engineering. So that's what I thought I wanted to be, and I went to Texas Tech. I was going to take that, and I didn't. I don't know how to explain it, but it was beyond my comprehension.
Were you good in math in high school?
I did all right in math, yeah. But it was just, I spent 2 years trying to be an electrical engineer, and I decided wasn't enough hands-on for me.
Okay.
So that's when I switched over to civil engineering. And learned how to do surveys and prepare maps and plans, that kind of, that, you see where I'm going with this?
Absolutely.
The electronics and stuff is kind of out there in the vapors, and you have to kind of imagine them along, where you're doing something that you can three-dimensional things. It's a lot of, more appeal to me more, I guess, and I enjoyed it. I loved the surveying.
You already mentioned that you really liked outdoor stuff. You certainly the archaeology work you were doing. And you know, marching band, you're outside doing stuff. And electrical engineering is a lot of thought work, a lot of circuit board work, a lot of radio frequency kind of stuff. So it makes a lot of sense that civil engineering would have reconnected you to the outdoors.
Yeah, it did. And the math that was required, you learned, hard to explain. Once I got into the upper classes of the civil engineering, you're going to build a bridge for a locomotive to go over, and you're going to use some formulas and whatnot, and you see the practical application of that. And that was nice too, you know. You had some feeling of completion and doing something.
And the math wasn't super complicated. I mean, were you looking at differential equations? I don't know if you needed that much math.
Well, you didn't.
Okay.
You didn't, but you had to take it as a prerequisite.
All right. Okay, so you had to struggle through that. But a lot of trigonometry would have been straightforward, certainly for...
I had no problem with trigonometry, and especially in surveying. That's the basics of surveying.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know that silver bridge down there in the bottom of the canyon?
Yes.
We did that with textbook triangulation. So we didn't stretch a tape across the river to find out how long the bridge would have to be. We laid it out in a triangulation pattern.
Okay, I want that story. I don't want it now, but I want that story.
Okay.
Super.
Yeah.
And how did you manage to afford, first of all, where is Texas Tech?
Lubbock.
Okay, so not far from home?
Nope.
Did you?
Put my laundry home every weekend.
Okay, but you were staying on campus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dormitory.
Okay. And how did you afford that? How did your parents afford that? What did you do?
Well, you know what the tuition was?
$20 a semester, I'm thinking. I don't know. What was it?
$50 a semester.
Wow.
And you know why is that? I don't know what it is now, and I don't know what... But the reason for that was when the state of Texas became a state of the United States, it kept all of its public lands.
Okay.
It wasn't like Arizona or New Mexico. Texas kept its public lands, and they sold the public land to go into the educational fund for establishing the colleges.
Okay.
And so that's the land that they didn't sell, a lot of it down around the middle of Odessa, the Permian Basin oil, you know, back then, $50 tuition, $300 a semester for room and board.
Wow.
For a semester, yeah.
All right.
And then, of course, you had fees, lab fees and whatnot on top of it.
And books.
Yeah, books and labs.
You had to buy books. Did you work while you were going to school? Did you work in the summer?
I worked for my dad in the summer for some of the summers, and then the last two summers I worked for the National Park Service. As a student engineer.
Okay. And a little light bulb has gone off in my pea brain here saying, You know, Dan, this might be a good place to put a comma in this oral history series, because I'm going to want to know all about that NPS summer program.
I'll tell you, I'll just tell you this much. It was from border to border. The two summers was on one border, and the second summer was on another border.
Wow.
So you think about that one.
Huh. And this would have been in 59 or 60, 61?
So 62, 63.
Okay.
I wasted some time with some of those courses I took for electrical engineering. I didn't take it either. I took Texas history as an elective, historical geology. It's basically paleontology. I took those just as electives in college.
Oh, fun! Tell me about the paleontology that you took.
Well, it's called historical geology, I guess. I had to take a regular course in geology.
Okay.
Part of my civil engineering, but then I took another semester of it with the lab for the to learn more about the fossils and whatnot.
Fun. I mean, I'm thinking you might have dug up some mastodon bones or...
I had some teeth that I found when I was looking for arrowheads.
Wow. How big were they?
They were just a partial. I sold them on eBay.
Uh-huh. I mean, I'm talking about the size of your hand?
Yeah, maybe a little bit bigger. It was a young animal. But
wow.
I remember when it was the group, the Garza County chapter of the Archaeological Society, we went out on the oil field one day where they had a dirt road that plowed through and had uncovered a tusk.
Wow.
A full tusk.
Wow.
And we excavated that. But it was in pretty poor shape because it had been that roadway for, forever.
Okay. And probably
but anyhow,
dried out, and the ivory would have all kind of flaked out.
Yeah, and while I was in college, the AES2 college, I was still active with the archaeological group, and we excavated a multiple burial. That had a lunate stone in it, which there's only been four of them found.
What kind of stone?
They call it a lunate stone. It's shaped kind of like a half moon. It's polished stone. And paper on that for the logical.
Huh, so L-U-N-A?
L-U-N-A-T-E.
Lunate, L-U-N-A-T-E, okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
You might look that up on the... There's been a few of them found, but that was one of the full all together. They found fragments of them, but this one was all there.
Wow. What would you do with the burials that you uncover? What would you do with the bodies?
We put them back in the ground.
Okay.
It took some bones for future testing, but we put them the burial. The four people were involved. Three children, and one of either. Juvenile or adult, that one. The way they found the grave was human teeth had been dug out from under a rock slab, and a varmint had gotten into that grave and disturbed it. But then these other three popped up. We all thought we had one burial. It ended up with four.
Hmm. Wow.
But anyhow.
Okay. So
that was mine.
Yeah. All right. Well, if it sounds okay to you, let's go ahead and wrap up part one here, and we will pick this back up in 62, 63 when you're in college.
That sounds good.
Okay. So with that, this will conclude part one of our Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Dan Cockrum. Today is Monday, November 20th, 2023. My name is Tom Martin, and Dan, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for putting up with me.
You're very welcome. Hang on.